All right, so effective citizen activism, and I kind of chuckled when Rhett asked me to talk about this because it's kind of, it's like beauty in the eye of, is in the eye of the beholder, right? It kind of depends on who you talk to determine what's effective. And but before talking to that real quick, just my background, it's I think kind of interesting in terms of how I've come to do what I've done. So I had been interested in and lightly involved in politics for several years, but my first foray into kind of really being involved was with Mike Lee's campaign in 2010. This was against Senator Bennett. And so I joined his campaign early on. I was his director of social media and was involved in other things like policy development and a few other things, but I was on his kind of core team in that and had a lot of interesting learning experience there. Back at that point in my life, I was very much let's uphold the Constitution, we need to fix Congress, let's get good people elected, and so that's why I signed on with Mike, who, in case you don't know, is now the senator, and he did win. So after he won the primary, I jumped off the campaign and soon after joined a group called the 10th Amendment Center. Have any of you not heard of them? So 10th Amendment Center is a national group. They have chapters in like two-thirds of the states, maybe three-quarters. And their goal is to get state legislatures to uphold the 10th Amendment, which says that all powers not delegated to the federal government are retained to the people, to the states or to the people. And so their goal is to encourage state legislatures to push back against Congress and say, you know, you're not allowed to do that. We haven't delegated that power. That's our power. So whereas before my take was, well, let's get good people in Congress to uphold freedom and the Constitution, then I had kind of a philosophy shift, a little paradigm shift, when I joined the 10th Amendment Center, or prior to that, I should say, where rather than working from Congress in a top-down fashion, it needed to be in a bottom-up fashion. There's a great book by Tom Woods called Nullification, and in there he talks about the history throughout America's existence of how the state legislatures have pushed back, have upheld the Constitution, because Congress so infrequently does, through nullification, through interposition, state legislatures can push back. So I worked with the 10th Amendment Center on that. Well, the problem that we had there, that I had, was that I would kind of join arms with these legislators, and we would push back against the feds, and we would get these bills passed at, in the Utah State Legislature to uphold the Constitution and tell the feds, you can't do this, you can't do that. And that was great. But so I would work with these legislators, but then they'd turn right back around and pass the same kind of bad laws here in the state, right? They'd be opposing tyranny at the federal level on constitutional grounds, but then they'd think, oh, there's no limits on doing that here in Utah, and they'd pass all sorts of big government stuff here in Utah. So I left the 10th Amendment Center. Great organization, nothing against them at all, but I realized that I needed to focus on the inward vessel. I needed to focus my efforts on cleaning house here in Utah, because it's hypocritical to fight for freedom and try and get the feds to uphold the Constitution if here in our own home, in the Utah legislature, in Utah government, we abandon the principles of liberty and expect someone else to uphold them. So that's, I founded Libertas Institute about a year and a half ago, and have been involved with that since. It's my full-time job. We have enough donors. I'm in it full-time. We've got several part-time and volunteer folks involved as well. So the goal here is to uphold liberty at the state level. And then once we kind of, you know, if and when we achieve success there, not only can we be a model for other states, but then without hypocrisy, we can then approach the feds and say, look at how well we're doing this in Utah. You need to follow suit. They're on the table, kind of obvious now, but I'm the author of two books, Latter-day Liberty and Latter-day Responsibility, both dealing with the principle of liberty primarily from an LDS theological standpoint, and endorsed by Ron Paul and Judge Napolitano, Tom Woods, and others. Excuse me. All right, so now the fun part. So effective citizen activism. I mean, you guys are here, you're active by going to meetings like this, but I think it, at least for discussion real quick, we need to talk about why be active. You know, what's the importance of being active at all? Who cares? So the easiest thing, right, is just to look at the world around you. There's drones dropping bombs half a world away. There's debt coming out our eyeballs. There's mass incarceration of nonviolent drug users, you know, militarization of the police, TSA is fondling people. I mean, just, you know, read the newspaper. Not that anyone does that. I haven't touched a newspaper in ages. But look at the news online. There's plenty of stuff going on that we need to be involved to help change. You're familiar probably with the Gandhi quote, "You must be the change you wish to see in the world." If we want to see things change and improve, who else is going to do it? It needs to be us. That's the basis of this great quote from Margaret Mead. "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." And then I like this one from Martin Luther King Jr. "As my sufferings mounted, I soon realized that there were two ways in which I could respond to my situation, either to react with bitterness or seek to transform the suffering into a creative force. I decided to follow the latter course." So we're suffering, tyranny exists, but we can turn that into fuel for change and be the ones to actually change. So we need to be active. We need to help improve things, the condition of our society. So why be effective? Why not just be active for, you know, discharging that duty and feeling good about it or whatever? Perfect quote by Henry David Thoreau. "There are 1,000 hacking of the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root." This is why we need to be effective. In my experience being involved politically over the years, there are many people who hack at branches and aren't very strategic in their political efforts, and we need to be striking at the root. We need to be effective. Otherwise, why invest the time and the money? And I think that's why a lot of people burn out too, right? You see people who will go to vote and, "Oh, that didn't work. I'm going to go home and just ignore things till the next election." Or you see people who donate to a campaign or they sign a petition and, you know, they're hacking at the branches. They're not very involved. So we want to be effective. We want to use our time and our resources and our talents wisely, judiciously. So now that we know we need to be involved and we know we need to be effective, there are a few benchmarks to go over, a few criteria upon which people we can organize our activities. So the first benchmark that people have for citizen activism is that good feeling, right? They feel like they've done their duty. They've gotten involved. So examples of this are signing a petition, writing your congressman, you know, donating $10 to an important cause. These things make you feel good. It makes them feel like they've done something, that they've done their civic duty. This has a term, which I like. It's called slacktivism, because you're slacking as a form of activism. "Political activities that have no impact on real-life political outcomes but only serve to increase the feel-good factor of the participants." Okay, so these don't really amount to much. You can call yourself a citizen activist, I suppose, if you do these things, but your benchmark is merely to make yourself feel good. You're not actually doing anything. So we go from good feelings to spreading the word. This is the next benchmark for being involved and being engaged. Spreading the word, enlightening people, educating people. Examples of this are writing a letter to the editor, for example. Sending out an email to all your friends and family or any newsletter lists you may have access to. Leveraging social media, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest if you so choose, all of those. Holding a sign on a street corner, whether in protest or just by way of information. So these are better because they're longer lasting. You're educating. So even when the election is over, for example, if it's an education-based activism project, people are going to remember that. It doesn't just apply to one issue, one election, one vote. And so it's going to have a longer effect. So it's a little bit better. Spreading the word is good. Still haven't really changed stuff, but you're hopefully changing minds. You're exposing people to new ideas. So the one that I like, that I usually spend most of my time on, is generating discussion through controversy. And this, I have found, is a fine art at figuring out the best way to go about this. A few examples. I call this educational activism. So it's activism related projects, but they carry an educational message with them. It's not just a protest. It's not a, you know, necessarily one issue thing. It can be far more expansive. So this is a billboard that we put up, I don't know, a year ago, something like that. And this was on the 215, kind of close to the airport. And it was a satirical campaign, right? Obviously, we don't want them to bomb Iran. But the point was to help educate people that we didn't want to bomb Iran. At the time, it's died down a little bit, but we're shifting to North Korea now. Maybe we needed to do another one. But at the time, there was a lot of war rhetoric going on about Iran, a lot more saber rattling than we have right now. So we did this project, and the benefit here is that a very busy freeway. We raised money from donors. People donated $20, $50, $100, whatever, and it was a grassroots campaign effort. We put up the billboard, and not only did we get all the exposure from people driving by, so we're educating passersby, but we got a ton of media attention because it's controversy. No one does this. People put up billboards for mattress warehouses and tech companies and stuff. So this was unique. It was new. I'll show you real quick a clip from KSL. We got ABC4 and CBS and a bunch of stations and tons of news newspapers. The KSL clip I'm going to show you, I don't know if you know how TV stations work. They kind of have sister stations. They're usually owned by a parent company. So KSL has all these sister stations, and they put this clip out onto their feed that they share, where news agencies can use their sister company's video and say, oh, look what happened here, and all of a sudden they have easy access to this video that they can just run the clip and fill their time. So they put it out there, and it was shown, it was picked up by, I think, over 50 stations throughout the country. CNN then picked it up and put it on their front page. So we just got a ton of attention from this thing, all because we put up a little billboard. So here's the clip.
For what it says, as questions continue to mount regarding Iran's nuclear capabilities, one Utah man is worried it will ultimately lead to war. So he and some friends rented a billboard to voice their concern.
New specialist Alex Cabrera joins us at the billboard site in West Valley, and Alex, that does turn a lot of heads there for sure.
It certainly does, Keith and Lori. Now, this billboard has only been here since this past Tuesday. This spot is located just north of the Maverick Center along 9215 in West Valley. And let me show you what the billboard says. Right there, big letters, bomb Iran. Now, at first, that message is striking, but the designer says once you understand the message behind it, it all makes sense.
A picture of a bomb, the word war crossed out in big, bold letters. With so many billboards in the Salt Lake Valley, the man who designed this one knew he had to go big to get big attention.
We feel it's a message that needs to be heard. It's not getting a lot of attention. The war drums are beating very loudly.
Connor Boyack helped design this billboard. At first glance, it looks like he's in favor of bombing Iran.
And some people say, well, people might think you're actually trying to advocate that people go bomb Iran. That's not the truth. And if you go to the website, that's clear.
Which is the second part of the billboard, where you'll see support the troops with troops crossed out. Instead, it means support the military-industrial complex.
It would be a war that would benefit what Dwight D. Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, the war profiteers, the propagandists. This isn't a war that we need to fight.
Boyack says about 50 friends helped pay for the billboard. The very day it went up by the Maverick Center in West Valley, the website listed on it received some 15,000 hits. He feels the lead-up to a possible war with Iran is very similar to the war buildup before the Iraq invasion.
You know, a lot of people, I think, are buying into the pro-war message. They feel fearful. They think that we do need to go attack Iran. What we try and do is balance that with fact.
The website is full of pictures, documentaries, and information Boyack feels will help people understand what he calls the whole story. So another Iran doesn't happen.
We want to make the people aware of what's going on. We want to make them hold their leaders accountable. There hasn't been a lot of that.
Now, this billboard was paid for a month. Depending on donations, it could go another month or be moved
to another spot. Now, of course, Boyack knows a billboard on its own won't stop a war from happening, but maybe it will create some conversation that will ultimately make its way to elected leaders. And Keith and Lori, he says he felt like he just had to do something, and this was his way.
Yeah, it's going to be a talker, that's for sure. Thanks, Alan.
So that got broadcast to hundreds of thousands of other people. We raised all the money. It took me an hour to design it with a few other people, and we had a huge impact. And so that was an example of what I like to call educational activism. Another one we did for the LDS crowd was this one a few months later. It's like once you do one billboard, it's kind of hard to stop. It just works so well. We raised the money for this one too. If you can't see it there, it says, "Why did Spencer W. Kimball say we are a warlike people? Find out at warlikepeople.com." Still hammering this war message. This is a talk by an LDS prophet in the late 70s that called us a warlike people, that we idolize the military and these gods of steel and stone that we build up. So it was our attempt. Now, this one was strategically positioned. It was in Utah County. It was positioned so that all the people, it was during General Conference weekend, people are thinking about prophets, those who are LDS, because they're going to go listen to a prophet. They're a lot more traffic going by this billboard. So like with the Bomb Iran billboard, we did the same one here where we had a website. We didn't just want to put up a billboard and that was it. So this was Warlike People, this still is up, warlikepeople.com. So they come here, they read more of that talk. There are a bunch of talks on the left with pro-peace, anti-war messages. They can click to read the full thing. So it was our attempt to kind of compile some of the anti-war messages from church leaders to present to members of the church. This one also got a ton of media attention, very effective, got a lot of conversation, and we felt it was a smashing success. So, like I said, educational activism. If we just put up this website alone and tried to share it with social media, we may have, you know, shared it within our circles, but not too much outside of our circles. But we plaster up a billboard, and suddenly everyone driving by is looking at it too and wondering, what's this controversial billboard about? Because you try and make it so it's engaging enough so they want to go look at the website and learn more. Young Americans for Liberty, actually, some of these projects may be familiar to you with, I don't know if your chapter has done any or other chapters have done a lot. There's a lot of activism projects that they've done that are very educational. So this is Pin the Drone on the War Zone, and it gets people to try and guess which countries drones have attacked. And so it's like pin the tail on the donkey, but then that helps people understand where drones have all attacked. Jenganomics, using Jenga to teach economics, and there's a kit that you can download on the Young Americans for Liberty website that kind of goes along with that to help people learn free market stuff. This was kind of a fun one. Little American flags, one for each of the deaths in America. I think it's American deaths, actually. Men and women. So it's military deaths only in Iraq, and look how staggering that is. The cross there is symbolic as well to drive it home to people. A living debt clock, right in the middle of a quad or wherever this was, a busy intersection with a lot of foot traffic in a university. The rags to riches one, this is a fun one where they put different countries' flags based on where they think they fall on the economic freedom scale. And then people usually put, you know, USA towards the top and then are then told that we're actually towards the bottom of this group and there's other less free states that are actually ahead of us in economic freedom. Valentine's Day, making little Valentine's, you know, your heart is my gold standard. And just these funny little, you know, what is that? I only have eyes for you and inflation, but mostly you. And it gets people thinking about this and it gets it in their heads. The free speech wall, talking about free speech rights and how a lot of times free speech is limited. For example, when a president will come, they'll have designated free speech zones that are like, you know, half a block away. And so a free speech activist project as well, that one's effective. So that's educational activism. Then, of course, if you're primarily just educating, you're still not actually changing stuff. So we want to change things. Our efforts need to be both political and educational. If it's only political, then we get the pendulum effect is what I call it. So an example of this is in 2010, we got Bob Bennett out, and that was great. Tea Party was very active, and we got Bob Bennett out of office, but then the Hatch folks fought back with a lot of money. The Tea Party folks went to sleep. They weren't very active this time around. And Hatch came back, and he won. And the political pendulum came back and shifted because there was really no educational component to that whole movement. It was mostly political. It was a lot of effort to become state delegates and beat Bennett, and then that was then used against them, shifted in the other direction, and now Hatch won, and it's changed the whole political landscape in Utah because all of the Hatch delegates have elected moderate state legislators and other government positions as well, governor. And so that's the problem with primarily having it be a political effort. Before the state legislature this year, we held a meeting for all the Tea Party leaders, all the Constitution Tea Party folks who were involved in 2010 and very active. We invited like 100 people, and it was a strategy meeting for one of the bills that we wanted to run in the legislature. Zero showed up. Zero. And these are the folks who were like active and dedicated. They're the folks who were trying to get other people involved. These aren't just people who would come to a meeting and, oh, okay, they didn't show up. These were actually the most involved folks. No one showed up. The Tea Party was largely dead, and we saw that in the state legislature this year. And it's this political pendulum that we need to get away from. And I think, from what I've seen working at the federal level and being involved in city council for a long time and now at the state legislature, I think if we're talking about effective citizen activism, I think the best place that we can focus is the state legislature because they can push back against the feds. And the state is, of course, where you fix state things. And you can even fight local stuff at the state level because every city and county is a political subdivision of the state. So the state can simply pass a law that overrides any city ordinance and the state trumps. So the state is kind of the key focal point. And so that's where I found, you talk about return on investment being effective in your activism. The state legislature is a great way to do it, but remembering, of course, that we need to be educating people along the way. Going back to that Tea Party thing, I thought of this quote about the dedication that we need if we're actually going to be involved in citizen activism. It's a familiar quote about the Sunshine Patriots and Summer Soldiers. This is something that I often think about when I see people who will kind of be involved for a week and then I don't hear from them for 3 months and then they're involved again. And of course, everyone has different circumstances. I know a lot of folks who are involved, for example, moms with little kids, and they'll be involved in an issue and very engaged, but then of course they've got stuff going on and they can't. But we need consistency and we need dedicated people. If we're going to be effective in our activism, I think we really need to be engaged. So last couple of things I wanted to talk about was quick tips to be effective. One is to make yourself known and build your brand. If you're going to change things, you need to have people know who you are. And that, in my experience, will best come when you're doing things consistently. So if you're writing like an op-ed every couple of months that you get published in the paper, people are going to start realizing who you are. If you're trying to build your social media profile and you're often posting political stuff and educating people, that's going to have a trickle effect and people are going to learn more about you. Whatever your talents are, you want to keep hammering away so that people begin to learn who you are and you have a brand that you build around yourself. Be creative. This is a huge one. I mean, that billboard that we did was so unique, and that's what got us a lot of media attention because no one had really done it. A couple years ago, one of the big things in Utah politics was parody Twitter accounts. People would create these Twitter accounts. For example, there was a bill, I think it was last year, about feral cats in Utah. And it was a silly bill, and it was allowing someone to be able to shoot a feral cat if they wanted to, or I don't quite remember, something like that. And so someone created a parody. It's still out there. It's called UT Feral Cat. And they would use that to kind of push their message. And they did it in a sarcastic, humorous way. But it was effective, and it got people thinking about it, got them talking about it. This is a big one that a lot of people shy away from. So we need to name names. We need to call people out. If people are violating their oath of office if they promise to do something as a candidate and then went against that. We need to call them out, and I'll talk in a second about accountability mechanisms as part of activism. We need to make sure that people know that we're going to make public their deviations if they go against us. I'm a big fan of throwing mud against the wall and seeing what sticks. And by that I mean if you have a project you want to do, something you want to get out, work multiple angles. Try all sorts of different ways of doing it. And maybe one way will be more successful. Maybe people will respond better to it. Maybe, you know, podcasting will be better than writing an article. But whatever activism project you want to be involved in, try and have different outlets so you can see what works best. And this is the huge thing that I want to stress is be consistent and be consistently active. I've seen that in my own life when I've involved in politics to the extent that I've been engaged, you know, on a semi-daily basis, weekly basis, constantly pushing an issue. Then that gets people to think about it, gets people to change. We can't expect any change if we kind of come up to the surface for air and do something and then we kind of duck back down for weeks or months or whatever, and there's not going to be any lasting change. Legislators aren't going to learn who we are if we're not in their face all the time, if we're not constantly pushing a message. We need to be consistently active if we're going to be effective. And the last thing is creating accountability. So those who think they're in charge need to be made to feel who's really in charge, and that's us. So in closing, I'll talk about two methods that we've been doing at Libertas Institute to do that. One is this legislation tracker. So in Utah, the legislature meets for 45 calendar days. And that includes Saturdays and Sundays when they don't meet. So they meet for something like 33 or something like that. Starts in late January and goes to, you know, sometime in March. And in that 45-day period of time, you get something like 700-some-odd bills introduced. There's just a mass amount of activity focused in that 45 days. It is a huge headache. It is a big blitz, a lot of activity. So the problem that a lot of people have who want to be involved is that they have, it's so overwhelming. They don't know where to start. They don't know where to look. They don't know how to follow it. So we built this tracker and said, look, we're going to take the 700-some-odd bills. We'll read every single one at Libertas Institute, and we'll compile in the tracker only the ones that affect individual liberty or private property or free enterprise. So don't worry about the, you know, 600 other ones. I think we ended up with 80-ish something in here out of the 700-plus. And so we distilled this down. And actually during the session, we had another column over here that had the status. And so as bills were working their way through the system, you could see, you know, uh-oh, that bill just passed the House of Representatives. I should call my senator and say, hey, you know, looks like this bill's coming over to you guys. Can you please vote against it? Here's why. So we were able to update the status as we went through the session so that people could, you know, they could come here and sort by sponsor name and then come down and say, oh, maybe Representative Draxler is my representative, and, oh, he's, you know, supporting this alcohol restriction bill. And so this was an easy way that a lot of people were looking at to try and be more active, because they wanted to call the representatives, they wanted to be engaged on important bills, but they were just drowning in the number of bills that were out before, to the point where they just went inactive. They didn't do anything because it was so overwhelming. This, now they can say, oh, well, Representative Christensen's my representative. He's got three bills on there. Looks like Libertas Institute likes two, so those are good bills, but this is a bad one. Let me give him a call and say, hey, can we amend this, or is there something else you can do? And so focusing this for people has allowed them to take their desire to be active and actually do something about it because it's manageable. So that was something we did during the session. After the session ended, we basically took this list and distilled it down even more. We got rid of the ones that, you know, the bills didn't make it out of committee or maybe they were less important. And we ended up, with 22 bills, the most important bills that pertain to liberty and private property and free enterprise during this legislative session. So we went through and we tallied every single representative's vote, every single senator's vote. And, for example, the overall legislative score is 43%. So according to how we ranked these 22 bills, that means that 43% of the time the legislature overall was voting, legislators in the legislature, I should say, were voting the way we wanted to. The House of Representatives was 44, Senate was 40. Interestingly, that's kind of an interesting dynamic. Senators, one theory is that senators happen to be older, and in the House of Representatives, you find a lot younger folks who are more liberty-minded. So if you come over here, you can click on any of these columns to sort. I'll click again. So you can see we had one legislator who got 100%, which this is the fourth year that we've done an index for now, and that's the first 100% that we've got. One that had 95%, and then you can see they go on down from there. And even these legislators here who are getting in the high 60s or 70s, they're very freedom-minded legislators. They may be more conservative, and so they'll vote for, like, the Utah Marriage Commission, right, using taxpayer dollars to promote the importance of marriage. And we said, that's a bad bill. Marriage is great, but you shouldn't be forcing taxpayers to educate people on marriage. It's not the proper role of government. So this has been very effective because now it allows for accountability, right? You want to know who your legislators are. So first step, come here to Liberta's website. I'll go to the homepage, and I'll click on this little who represents you. So I'm going to enter my address. Okay, hit submit. There we go. So based on my address, here's my senator, here's my representative. So now, if I want to hold them accountable, I can say, let me get rid of this overlay here. I can say 68% for my representative, Jake Andrade, that's crap. You know, he's a conservative guy, he's a freedom-minded guy, he should be up in the 80s or 90s, come on. So now I can click through. And I can say, well, I want to see more details about that 68%. Oh, it looks like it opens the... Okay, I'll go back to the index here. So if I look for Jake Andrig, he's here at the very top. Here's a 68%, and I can see, okay, well, it's HB 147 he voted against. There's that Utah Marriage Commission. So... We give a little summary of what it's about, why we said that they should have voted against it. He voted against, for example, the Children's Hearing Aid Pilot Program, right? Using taxpayer dollars to give out free hearing aids to kids in need. Well, okay, we definitely want to help those in need, but it's not the role of government. We should encourage private charity and not force taxpayers to foot the bill. You know, on and on and on. You can go look at these bills and say why we included them, why we tallied it the way we did, and then you can see, of course, who voted for or against it. So now this is enabling citizen activists who maybe haven't been able to pay attention to 700 bills to say, well, here's 20 important bills. In our view, 20 of the most important bills that came out during the session, and all I need to focus on are my senator and my representative. And I'm going to send them an email. I'm going to give them a call and say, let's talk about these votes. Why did you vote against it this way? Tools like this have allowed for a lot more accountability from people who want to be engaged but otherwise would feel completely inadequate because it's so overwhelming. So it's things like this that I think we need to create on our own. We need to support ones that already exist so that we can increase accountability. Like I said, those who think they're in charge, these legislators, need to be made aware that we're the ones in charge. And it's through efforts like this, I think, that we're going to be able to accomplish that. Before this, there are other groups who do indexes as well. But without tools like this, citizens, delegates, it's really hard to know, say, okay, well, how did my senator do? How did my representative do? So this is the fourth year we've done it. Like I said, with Orrin Hatch getting elected, several of the more conservative legislators either ran for higher office and lost, so then they didn't end up in any public office, or they were defeated. And so a lot of the legislators who were elected this time are more moderate, and that's kind of reflected in this 43%, I think, that the legislature got overall. So anyways, as I've tracked my own political migrations over the years and how I focus my efforts, I've come to really think that the state is the place to fight. And of course, every person has different interests and talents. You know, maybe you want to go to Washington, D.C. and spend time in Mordor, but I don't. But I've seen, for example, you know, we have this social media tool that we built. And so that you can find, you know, if your representative or senator is on Facebook or Twitter, and so here are all their accounts. And you can see, like, 80, 90% of them are on Facebook. Some of these are pages, but a lot of them are their personal profiles. Follow them on Twitter. Here's their cell phones. You could send them a text. And so I initially built this for me, for our group, so that if we're up there in a committee meeting at the legislature and there's some discussion going on in a committee meeting, for example, I can text a legislator and say, oh, hey, bring this up or think about this, and get that message to them more quickly. But I thought, you know, everyone wants to be able to use a tool like this, and so we compiled all the information, we presented it. But do you know how hard it was to get Mikely elected, you know, to be able to defeat an incumbent with deep pockets at the federal level is just extremely difficult. And it's very easy to be engaged at the state level, to connect with these folks on social media, run into them at the grocery store. You know, I go to a couple lunches a week with legislators and talk to them about bills that we want to run and things that we want to do. They're very accessible. It's very easy to say, hey, here's this idea I have for a bill. Would you be interested in running it? Or do you know another legislator who would? Their ease of access, their willingness to work with you, the ease with which you can hold them accountable and try and get them defeated in another election, it's just so much easier than the federal level. I think that as we talk about trying to be effective, that the state level is kind of where it's at. So that's where we're focusing with Libertas Institute. That's where we've seen the best gains, the best return on our investment. And whatever your talents and interests may happen to be, I would suggest that to you for consideration as you guys get involved going forward. We've seen good things come from it, and clearly we've got a lot more work to do. We're only at 43% as a legislature, but we'll get there. So that's it.